Welcome to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast, the show that explores the background of Tolkien's amazing world from the very beginning. We are about to embark on a very different kind of story. We've read through mythologies, the origins of everything, and the Valar, and elves and men, and dwarves. And more recently, we've talked about the story of Beren and Lúthien, which comes across very much like a fairy tale. But now we're about to embark on the story of Túrin Turambar. And the story of Túrin is very different. This is a different kind of work. If Beren and Lúthien is the best version you've ever heard of Rapunzel, because it pulls elements from Rapunzel, but other fairy tales as well, Túrin Turambar is more like Shakespeare. Beren and Lúthien you might consider, in the traditional sense, a comedy. Not because it's necessarily funny, but because the main characters survive. And sure, yes, they die, but of course they come back. And so they survive. They move off stage into the rest of their lives, and we assume everything's fine. Turin's story is different, and I need to prepare you for that. So here we are today, on the edge of a forest in Dor Lomin, part of Hithlum, near Turin's family home. Now, if you recall, there are some bad things happening. That's part of why we did the last episode. This part of the world, this northern, western region, has been resettled by the very men that sided with Morgoth. And they are watching over the people here. The good people. The people who sided with the elves. And the story starts out dark. And this is part of why I'm doing the intro the way I am. It starts off dark. There's sad things that happen. And it just gets worse. This is a tragedy. This is one of the most tragic lives, and yet important lives, of any of the characters that we will read about at all. So let me start out with this, because I think you need to have a sense of who Túrin is. He's an unconventional character in an unconventional story, in a way that Tolkien typically doesn't write, and yet it's still one of the older works that he started very early on, around the time when he was working on Beren and Lúthien originally. In the longer work, The Children of Húrin, which we will probably read in the future at some point, we're going to work through a lot of these extra books and things eventually, but The Children of Húrin was a complete telling of this story of Túrin and the children of Húrin. I won't bury the lead here, but you get where this is going. This was a work that was released about 15 years ago now, I think. This is another one of those extra books that was put out by Christopher Tolkien after he had the time to edit everything back together. And so in the Silmarillion, we get a shortened version of the story. And that's the version that we're going to read through today as we work our way through the Silmarillion. But know that there's more. And there's a passage in The Children of Húrin that gives us a glimpse of the character of Túrin and what he's like. And he's very different. He's a very different kind of hero. He's almost an anti-hero in a way. Or a tragic character who's thrown into the events of the world and just does the best that he can. And he feels very real for it. This is the quote. "He was dark-haired as his mother and promised to be like her in mood also, for he was not merry and spoke little though he learned to speak early and ever seemed older than his years. Turin was slow to forget injustice or mockery. But the fire of his father was also in him, and he could be sudden and fierce. Yet he was quick to pity, and the hurts or sadness of living things might move him to tears. He's a complex character with a difficult backstory. Hurin is his father. At the end of the Battle of Unnumbered Tears, Hurin is carted away to Angband and placed on a seat at the top with the vision of Morgoth to see all the terrible things that Morgoth is about to do. Yeah, this is his son. This is his story. So normally I do a little bit more of this kind of thing, the thing I'm about to do right here in the little intro section of the show, but there's still some more stuff that we've got to talk about before we get into the details of the story here. There is a very interesting family tree that's happening here at the beginning of the story. You have Hurin and Morwen together. Hurin, who we've talked about before, and Morwen, his wife, and their lineages are very interesting. Hurin comes from both the houses of Hador and Haleth. These are the Mannish houses, which we've talked about before. But what about the first house? That's the second and third house. What about the first house? The house of Beor. The house of Beor, we get characters like Barahir, who was the father of Beren. And we also have Bregolas, who was the father of Beligund, and Beregund. Beregund is Morwin's father. So Turin is a child of all three houses of men. So keep that in mind as we move forward. Also, Morwen, his mother, is a distant cousin of Beren. It's complex, but consider it a distant. It's one of those, like, is it that's a second cousin, third, three times removed, or it's weird, but a distant cousin of Beren. They are related. They are of the same house. And because they are of these two houses combined, then they are, in a sense, kind of part of this royal family. And it's not royal in the sense of, say, the kings of the elves or something like that, but they have lived a lifestyle that is higher than the average man or woman walking around here in Dor Lomond. They have a nicer home. They might actually have some things of value in the home. And this comes into play as we get into the story. So here, let's get into the story. At the very beginning, we are told about not Hurin and Morwen, but instead we're told about Rain or Ryan. R-I-A-N, pronunciation is not my strength, daughter of Beligund, who I just mentioned, and wife of Hur, son of Galdor. And she was wedded to him 2 months before he went with Hurin, his brother. Hurin and Hur are siblings, and they go off to battle. This is 2 months before the Narniath Arnoidiad. They head off. And this is when tragedy strikes. She doesn't hear back from her newly wedded husband, and she was already with child. Tur is the name of the boy. And basically, she hands this child off to the Grey Elves in Mithrim, and then she departs, and we're told that she laid herself down and dies because she's so sad for the events that happened. Mother of the Year award, but again, remember, guys, I told you this is going to be dark. This is where it starts. All right, then we move into Morwen. Morwen, the daughter of Beregund. The relation there, Beligund, Beregund, Rain, I think it's Rain, and Morwen are cousins. I believe that's the right association. And she is the wife of Hurin. Hurin and Hur were brothers. You can see how there's these kind of family connections going on here, right? and Hurin was the lord of Dor Lomond. So everything's going great until the Battle of Unnumbered Tears, and then tragedy strikes. And both of these women need to figure out what to do, because they no longer have the men of the family there with them. There's a complete change in the social structure, because like I mentioned before, the Easterlings have been moved into this area by Morgoth, and there's a threat there. Now, there's some other details about this family as well. They have a daughter. Their daughter's name is Laleith, and I looked this up. I believe that's the pronunciation. L-A-L-A-I-T-H. Laleith. Laleith, I think is it. Which means laughter. She is the eldest child in this family, daughter of Morwen, and Turin loves her. She's his older sister. And then we're told, again, more tragedy, that when she was 3 years old, before the Battle of Unnumbered Tears, there came a pestilence to Hithilum, born on an evil wind out of Angband, and she died. This is the first time in the Silmarillion that we're told that Morgoth was not just fighting them with armies and with misinformation and spies, he was using biological warfare as well, sending out disease. And she died from this disease. And younger brother Turin lives through this at a very young age. And keep track of this stuff, because these are the things that shape his character throughout the story. Now we move to the time after the Battle of Unnumbered Tears. And Turin is 8 years old. Morwen is still living in Dor Lomond. And she's again with child when her husband disappears. This is the moment when the Easterlings move in and they start messing with everybody except for Morwen. We are told that so great was the beauty and majesty of the Lady of Dor Lomond that the Easterlings were afraid and dared not to lay hands upon her or her household. And they whispered amongst themselves, saying that she was perilous and a witch skilled in magic and in league with the elves. Yet she was now poor and without aid. But she did have one source of help, and that was a kinswoman, we're told kinswoman, we don't know the exact relation here, of Hurin, named Erin, A-E-R-I-N, who Broda, and this is a name that's going to come up later, Broda is it ends with an A, which typically in English names means feminine, but it's not. This is a male Easterling who has taken her as his wife. And it doesn't sound in the way it's written here like it was a mutual agreement. This is one of the things the Easterlings were given, was the ability to take whoever they wanted as their wives and all of, again, the darkness that that entails. And because of all of this, the Easterlings there especially, and the amount of power that they had over the people of this region, she was concerned that Turin would be taken from her. He's 8 years old and enslaved. He's only going to get bigger and stronger. He would work really well in the mines. So she decides, all right, I need to take care of Turin. I'm going to stay here. This is my homeland. I need to fight for this place. But Turin is too young. This isn't his fight yet. And she knows the story of Beren and Lúthien. This story has gotten passed around. People have talked about this. And so she decides to take a chance. What if King Thingol, who she knows is hidden away in Doriath somewhere, were to take her son, a relative of Beren, and keep him safe? Maybe help him grow into a man, somebody that she would be proud of, somebody that she would have a difficult time even taking care of in the situation she's in right here. So she sends Turin off at 8 years old with two older people, friends, people of this village, in order to try to find their way into Doriath. And we know that this is very dangerous. Most people get confused and lost. The Girdle of Melian is no joke. People die. But she was willing to take that risk. And we're told here in the text, therefore, in the autumn of the year of lamentation, Morwen sent Turin forth over the mountains with two aged servants, bidding them find entry, if they could, into the kingdom of Doriath. The year of lamentation refers again to the Battle of Unnumbered Tears in that same year. It goes on and says, thus was the fate of Turin woven, which is foretold in that lay that is called Narn Aehyn Hurin, the tale of the children of Hurin, and is the longest of all the lays that speak of those days. All right, here we are in the middle of the show. Let's take a quick break and thank our patrons for the support that you guys give this show in order for me to keep doing it. I really do appreciate it. And so we have to shout out our newest patrons, Sunny, Chaos Runner, Eric B, Gertrude S, Hobbits and Dragons, and Kenny C. Welcome to the Patreon. I didn't realize Hobbits and Dragons were now supporting the show. Thank you very much, everybody. I really do appreciate it. And that brings us up to 146 patrons. That's, man, those numbers just blow my mind every time I read them. And we have to shout out our Tier 3 VIP patrons. Here we go. Anita B, Bo, Brandy D, Chris P, Esoteric Rage, Jesse P, Larry, Obi-Wan Kenobi, Sam B, Shannon L, and Sheev Palpatine. Thank you to all of you guys. The names are so funny to me. Thank you again for all of your support. If you're interested in checking out what you can get on the Patreon, including ad-free episodes, an entire list of bonus episodes. There's like one bonus episode for every regular episode. So it's like having an entire second podcast to listen to. Go to patreon.com/LOTR Lorecast. So LOTR, Lord of the Rings, Lorecast. And check out everything over there. We have some new reviews that came in as well. Let's get through these. We got four of them. This shouldn't take too long. This first one is from Cape Meister in the United States, who writes, the perfect podcast. Wow. 5 stars. I've discovered this podcast a week or so ago, and it is on throughout my entire day. Ever since reading The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit back in grade school, I have been hooked. I reread the books annually. However, I have never read The Silmarillion. This podcast makes me want to go pick up a copy and read it immediately. Yeah, go do it. Go do it. Robot's podcast is quickly becoming my favorite podcast due to his storytelling, the inflections in his voice, and his ability to truly immerse you in the events that he is providing information on. Anyone who enjoys Tolkien's works will not regret giving this podcast a listen. Excited to give his other podcasts about the Elder Scrolls and Fallout a listen as well. I hope you enjoy those as well. They are Fallout's a little bit more similar to this, and Elder Scrolls, I have a co-host. And it's a little bit more conversational, but still dense with information. So hope you enjoy that. Thank you, Cape Meister. Silverhawk 91 from the US writes, a shining Laurelin in a world full of great darkness. I like that. I have been doing some house projects the last few days and have binged all 39 episodes in that time. Simply amazing. As a longtime LOTR fan, Robots breaks down complex topics and relationships in a simple to follow format. Very excited to continue this journey with the weekly episodes. Thank you for your time and passion putting this work together. My question for Robots, since he reads these aloud, will we discuss any lore surrounding the Ents on this podcast? Yes, we'll get there. For sure. I mean, Ents are freaking cool, right? So yeah, thank you, Silverhawk. And then we have one from, this third one isn't really a real one. I'm not sure. It's from JerDRG. It says good, and then it has a hashtag with some letters after it. I looked that up. This might just be spam, but thanks for 5 stars, spammer. If it's not spam, correct me. I apologize if I'm calling you out for the wrong thing, but I think it might be. Then we have one more from good ol' MC in the US who writes, excellent show. This is a very thoughtful, thorough examination of the mythic beginnings of Tolkien's world. Simple and sweet. Thank you so much to all of you guys. And one last note. I put out a thing last week talking with the patrons about, hey, would you guys be interested in making some me making some t-shirts? And you guys can check out those and support the show, buy a t-shirt, have something for the holidays. And I got a response. People were like, yeah, let's do it. And they gave me some ideas. Words is hard. Who on the goodest boy? So there are now shirts up on robotsradio.net. There's a little sharp shop. That's words are hard. Oh my God. There's a little shop section on there. Just click it at the top on the top bar and you'll see the shirts. And we have 20% off everything right now. I'm basically selling them at cost because the markup isn't that high. So go check that out. This is about as cheap as I can make them for you. And it's a new provider that's even cheaper than the old one that I was using for the other shirts. Anyway, if you want a shirt, robotsradio.net. All right, let's continue on with Turin's story. So before we get into the details of what happens with Turin, we are told in the story that Morwen gives birth to a third child, a younger daughter of Turin, who she names Nienor, which I think is the pronunciation on that one, which means mourning. So the first daughter who didn't survive, past 3 years old, laughter, this daughter, mourning, and Turin means something very different. It's a Sindarin, and it means he who desired mastery. And it won't be the only name that Turin uses, because names are important. And we go through this a lot in Tolkien's writings. Oftentimes, characters take on different names themselves. They choose them. A lot of times, they are placed on them by someone or groups of people. Turin takes on a different name a few times in this story. But before we get there, we need to find out what happens. We are told that Turin and his companions, passing through great perils, came at last to the borders of Doriath. They had traveled fairly far to get there. There's a good distance between Dor Lomond and the borders of Doriath. This is a similar kind of path that Beren would have had to take. And you would expect that the borders of Doriath, especially after the Battle of Unnumbered Tears, would be guarded heavily. And it was. But we don't just get any guard who discovers them. The one who notices them coming into the borders of Doriath is Beleg Strongbow, who we've talked about before. He was part of that group that went with Beren to go hunt down Karkaroth. He comes up a number of times in these stories. He also, this is another thing to note, in the Rings of Power show, there's a scene where Galadriel is talking with Elrond, and it's darkly lit at night. I think it's in like the first or second episode. And they are there with the carved out tombs or monuments to famous elves who have lived in the past. If you look carefully, Beleg is among them. Also, Luthien and Huon. Pretty cool. So Beleg finds them coming in and leads them directly to Thingol. Because we're told here that Thingol's mood had changed. Remember in Beren and Luthien, Thingol worked like a... I'm sure there's a literary name for what Thingol's role in the story was. This barricade to progress and the instigation of something that the group needed to do in order to further the story. There's a role that happens in literature where a character or a thing does that. Thingol was that in Beren and Luthien. They go to him. They want to get married. He's like, no, not going to allow it. You got to go get a Silmaril. This seems like an impossible task. He seems stubborn and unwilling to deal with anybody outside of the elves that he knows. In this story, things have changed. Beren has softened the king's opinion of the elf friends, and specifically these tribes of men who have been true to their word. Beren returns with a Silmaril in his hand, even though it's in the belly of Karkaroth, and the men of the houses that Turin comes from fought against Morgoth in the Battle of Unnumbered Tears. They have bought with their blood Thingol's respect. And in this situation, Thingol is looking at an 8-year-old boy, Thingol, who is millennia old, looking at a very, very young human from a royal lineage of the men in desperate need. And he takes him in as if he was his own and fosters him like a son. We're told here that Thingol received Húrin and took him even to his own fostering in honor of Húrin the Steadfast, because he heard about what Húrin did in the battle. For Thingol's mood was changed towards the houses of the Elfriends. Thereafter, messengers went north to Hithlum, bidding Morwen leave Dor Lomond and return with them to Doriath. He sends out an invitation to Turin's mom. And he's like, it's not safe out there. It's safe in here. We will raise your son, but wouldn't you like to be with him as well? And then it goes on. But still she would not leave the house in which she had dwelt with Húrin. And when the elves departed, she sent with them the dragon helm of Dor Lomond, greatest of the heirlooms of the House of Hador. Remember I mentioned that they are a royal line, and they have some items and things that show that. Túrin is given here a gift, which is sent with the elves, which is probably safer than handing it to an 8-year-old and two old people to make their way into Doriath. But now that she knows he's safe, here's your dragon helm. This was your father's. And in that we get symbolism. This idea that Túrin comes from a line of men who are warriors. A helm is not something you give to somebody who's going to grow up and be a scholar. And you can imagine this from Turin's perspective. His father, at 8 years old, disappears, goes off to battle, and disappears. And the one thing you have to remember him by is a helm. And it's a really cool one as well. It looks like a dragon. This is your lineage. This is who you come from. And he knows his father was a great hero. Think of the effect that has on a child. The story goes on and gives us kind of a glimpse. We get kind of a, I don't know, if this was a movie, it would be a montage. But we're told, here, I'll read it. It says, Túrin grew fair and strong in Doriath, but he was marked with sorrow. Yeah, for good reason. For 9 years, he dwelt in Thingol's halls. So by the age of about 17 here. And during that time, his grief grew less. For messengers went at times to Hithlum, and returning, they brought better tidings of Morwen and Nienor. Now, remember, he's never met this younger sister, but we find out that they seem to be doing okay. They're doing all right for themselves. But there came a day when the messengers did not return out of the north, and Thingol would send no more. Something dangerous had happened. Things had changed, and Túrin did not know what. And this is where we get our first real glimpse into the character of Túrin. It says, then Túrin was filled with fear for his mother and his sister, and in grimness of heart, he went before the king and asked for mail and sword. And he put on the dragon helm of Dor Lomond and went out to battle on the marches of Doriath and became the champion in arms of Beleg Cothalion, Beleg Strongbow. He goes to the king and says, it is time. I need to do something about this. And he realizes he can't just march over to Hithlum by himself and do something. But he can put some time on the borders of Doriath, protecting these people who have taken care of him and growing in his strength and his abilities. And they pair him up with Beleg, who you can imagine is probably like an older brother at this point to him. Beleg is already a great warrior, and he's known for his bow mastery. And young Turin, at 17 years old, puts on his armor, his sword, and his dragon helm, and marches out. And he spends 3 years, this is the montage section, he spends 3 years on the borders of Doriath, fighting the orcs, clearing the enemies of the elves and men from that land, living in the wild. And it changes him. He becomes very good at it, but it has an effect on his personality, or maybe brings out things in his personality that were already there, or maybe both. If you've known anybody who's spent any amount of time serving in the military, out in places that are dangerous, it has an effect. And we've talked about this before. Tolkien served in World War I. He knew what that was like. And so creating a character like Turin here, who spends 3 years on the front lines of this conflict, this is a character that models real people, and maybe people that Tolkien knew, and maybe parts of himself as well. When he returns, we're given one little story, and I'm going to end on this. And I'll just read Tolkien's words on this, because of course they're just so good. And when 3 years had passed, Turin returned again to Menegroth, the caves, the capital cave region of Doriath, just to remind you guys. But he came from the wild and was unkempt, and his gear and garments were way-worn. Now one there was in Doriath, of the people of the Nandor, high in the councils of the king. Saros was his name. He had long begrudged to Turin the honor he received as Thingol's foster son, and seated opposite to him at the board, he taunted him, saying, "If the men of Hithlum are so wild and fell, of what sort are the women of your land? Do they run like deer clad only in their hair?" Then Turin, in great anger, took up a drinking vessel and cast it at Saros, and he was grievously hurt. On the next day, Saros waylaid Turin as he set out from Menegroth to return to the marches. But Turin overcame him and set him to run naked as a hunted beast through the woods. Then Saros, fleeing in terror before him, fell into the chasm of a stream, and his body was broken on a great rock in the water. Turin did not intend for that to happen. He wanted to shame him and put him in his place. But this event will bring about a major change in the direction of Turin's life. And we'll talk about that next time.
Thanks for listening to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. If you'd like to learn more about other fantasy worlds, check out my other podcasts, The Elder Scrolls Lorecast, The Witcher Lorecast, and more at robotsradio.net. If you'd like to reach out, I'd love to hear from you. Send me a note on Twitter at robots_radio, or join our amazing community on the Robots Radio Discord. There are links in the show notes, or just search Robots Radio Discord, or find the link on robotsradio.net. I'll see you next time.